Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today we're going to talk about money, specifically the multiple streams of income that both Tony and I have built up over the years. And the goal of this episode is you'll listen to the different ways that we make money, choose the ones that you like, and then follow through and hopefully either emulate or be more successful than we are at making the money this way.
Hopefully be more successful, right? That's the goal?
Totally.
Blow us out of the water?
Yep.
Okay, so my question for you is, when you first got started, how did you think you were going to make money? Because I'm going to tell you mine after you go. Mine's pretty funny.
Okay, so before I started the e-commerce store, which was really my first business,
right?
I was doing Craigslist arbitrage. You know the story,
both,
but I'm not
we
sure.
We both were. I was doing eBay. You were doing Craigslist. Or you did eBay too.
Yeah, it was. I bought from Craigslist and then I sold on eBay. And you've heard the story, but I'm not sure if people in the audience have heard this story. I used to go and I used to buy these computer systems on Craigslist. Like, people didn't know what these things were worth. So I'd buy them really cheap, take them all apart, and then sell them individually, like the pieces of the computer, on eBay. But what ended up happening is that, like, the cheapest deals were in, like, the sketchiest neighborhoods. So I would literally be driving into these really bad neighborhoods, and then they invite me into their house. I'd be like, oh my God, I don't know if this is
what?
A good idea.
You never go in. That is, like, rule number one.
But I did.
Oh.
I went into this mobile home once.
Okay.
And I was like, I don't know if this is a good idea, but this is a killer deal.
And yeah, killer. That's how you end up dead. That's how that works.
So the reason why I stopped that was one day, like, I went to this really bad neighborhood and it wasn't a house. It was this dude's van. And it was a bunch of hard drives and it was clear that they were stolen. Like, so clear. Like, the wires were cut off and there's just in, like, a box. And he's like, hey, you want them? And there's this other guy in there that was intimidating. I was wearing my Stanford sweatshirt, glasses, and probably, like, flip-flops or something.
So what, basically how you normally dress.
Yes.
What's different about this? Oh, you have Crocs now. You've upgraded.
And then I didn't want them because, you know, hard drives, you can't tell if they're good or not. But I ended up buying them just out of fear. So I bought them all, and then I left, and I decided it was too dangerous.
Yeah, I took a more legitimate route. I put my two toddlers in the back of my Nissan Altima with one of those TV VCR combos shoved between the driver and passenger seat and let them watch Disney movies while I drove around town yard sailing.
How does yard selling work? You just go and buy yard sales and then sell it on eBay?
You just buy item. I don't buy the whole yard sale. I'll take everything in your yard that I can fit in the trunk of my Nissan Altima and cram beneath my children's car seats. I was not a very nice yard. So I always looked for the guy that was either getting married or divorced and he had to get rid of, like, his prized Star Trek collection or something. And I was like, oh, it's going to go to a beautiful home all over the country as I break up your collection and sell it piece by piece on eBay. But yeah, so of course, this is, like, before you know, cell phones, like, before, it wasn't before cell phones, but it was before data. So you had to really know your pricing because you couldn't, like, you know, today people walk into Target, right, with the Amazon arbitrage app,
yep.
right, and scan stuff and are like, oh, I should buy 50 Cabbage Patch dolls or whatever there is. And they know what to do. But, like, back then you really had to understand the market of what you were shopping because you just it was kind of a fun thing too, because you'd, like, shop all morning and then you'd get home at, like, noon and you'd, like, race in the house, get on dial up and check eBay for what you bought to see, you know, how well that morning went.
So what you did predates me. I mean, I think I had broadband by the time.
No, this was like 19. I know where I live, so it was like 1997 to 2000.
Okay, that's hardcore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I needed money. Like, I was like, I had two little kids. I couldn't really work, like, a real job because they were toddlers. And I mean, I could have, but I didn't want to put them in daycare because daycare was expensive. And I had a degree in political science, which doesn't really get you the best jobs in Orlando, Florida. you know, it was like, do I want to work as, like, a bartender at a restaurant, which I probably would have made more money. But I also didn't want to work until 2 a.m. and, you know,
right. That's like your whole weekend. You're working until like 2 a.m. Right?
Right. Although I always tell people that, like, are in dire need of money, I'm like, go work as a bartender. Go work as a server. Like, if you want it, if you need money quickly and you need to make money, like, significant money, go find, like, a restaurant that's really busy and go work for a couple months and get yourself back on your feet. But
yeah.
Anyway.
But that's not the type of income that we're going to be talking about today.
No, because think about it. Like, I spent all day Friday morning, all day Saturday yard sailing. And then, you know, I would have to take photos. I'd have to get them developed. I'd scan them.
Wait, what?
There was no digital camera. I remember getting a digital camera and it was like 20 pixels or something. I don't know. Like, and it was like so exciting that you could like, but I'd have to like go get them developed at Eckerd's or whatever the pharmacy was. And then I'd come home, scan them onto my computer. So it was like a full-time job selling on eBay. And I probably made like $500 a week, which was good money back then.
Oh, that's really good, actually. I wasn't even doing that much at the peak.
But I was probably doing this 40 plus out, plus all the time I spent on eBay just like researching, you know, like for you, like you had a good knowledge of computers. So you could know that if you went to a deal and you were like, okay, I know if I buy this for X amount of dollars, I'm going to be able to sell it for this.
Yeah.
But I had to constantly like educate myself on like what things were selling for, because you never know what you're going to find. Like, am I going to go to a yard sale and buy a bunch of like, you know, weird kitchen memorabilia, or am I going to go find some collectible? You know, it's just like, right, you had to know a lot of things. So, but yeah, so when I started Happy Housewife in 2008, or I started blogging in 2006, didn't really have a plan to make any money. And then when I started Happy Housewife, it was like, this was to make money. And I was convinced that I was going to pay my mortgage on coupon prints.
I don't even know what that is.
Okay, so back in the day, and this actually, I think you can still make money this way, although I'm not well-versed in this today. There were a couple coupon bloggers out there. People like Paul and Tiffany Ivanovsky, who we know, our friend Laurie at Passionate Penny Pincher, Crystal Payne at Money Saving Mom. And they had these websites where they wrote grocery deals. Like, if you go to Kroger this week, you know, Hungry Jack pancake mix is on sale for $1.99. There's also a coupon for 50 cents off, Kroger doubles, so you can get your pancake mix for 99 cents, right? And these bloggers would put these deals up every single week. Like, they would literally get the flyer for the grocery store, match them up with the coupons. And in the early days, this was all manual. So they were spending like crazy amounts of time. Like, Paul Ivanovsky would walk Walmart every single morning to find the deals, right?
He would
drop his kids off at school and walk Walmart at like 6:30 in the morning, every single morning. And coupons you get in like your Sunday newspaper. But there were a lot of coupons back in the day, and you can still do this today, that were printable from like websites. Like, you could go to coupons.com or other sites, and you could check these little boxes, and like whatever coupons you checked would print out. And it was always like cereal. It was like General Mills and Procter and Gamble, like the big Unilever type brands. And, you know, I had heard from a couple people that like you could make good money with people printing off coupons, because just think, if you showed somebody a deal where they could get like free laundry detergent, or their laundry detergent was going to be $2 as opposed to $7 because the, you know, coupon scenario, people would like flock to print the coupon. And if you showed them the deal, they'd print it from your link. Well, what I didn't realize was that coupon prints pay out 5 cents a print.
Oh.
So the volume that you have to do to make like real money, right? I mean, like, you can make a couple $100 a month, but like to make significant money, you have to have a huge amount of traffic. And then not only do you have to have a huge amount of traffic, you have to have huge amounts of traffic to those posts that talk about the coupon deals, because no one's just going to randomly land on your site and print a coupon, right? They have to basically want that deal scenario. So the goal would be to like show people 5 or 6 deal scenarios and then have them print 5 or 6 coupons, because it's 5 cents per coupon. So, you know, at best you could get people to print, you know, 10 coupons, and now you're at 50 cents, right? So you're at 50 cents a user on your site or visitor.
How would they even measure that? So it's just like, what if you just had a bot that just downloaded all your coupons?
Well, you have a link. I mean, they would sometimes come after people for fraudulent prints.
Okay. Okay.
But I'm sure, I mean, they had that, because you would get it. So you would go into the affiliate side of like a coupons.com or Red Plum. You would get your special link, and then, you know, you would get credit for any of the prints from your site. But I quickly learned that, one, I'm not like a deal shopper. So like, if there's a coupon on the shelf at the grocery store, I will grab it, right? Or if like I in Publix and it'll be like buy one, get one, and I already need it, I'll buy it. But I'm not like these person. I'm not one of these people that will like sit there and scour and match up like Paul and Tiffany and people like them. like they did this before they could make money from it. So they would sit there and scour the papers, scour the flyers, find the coupons because they wanted to get their grocery bill to like $20 a week or whatever. That was never me. I would have rather just like made my own food than try to find the deals and just bought like cheap, you know, I would have bought like cheaper items, you know? So yeah. I quickly realized that one, like I had absolutely no desire to like do these deal scenarios because I like I'm not going to do them myself. And then two, like my readers didn't care about the deal scenarios. They wanted to know like how to make your own bread or how to make your own pizza crust. Like my readers weren't couponers either. They wanted to know how to do everything from scratch to save money or like, you know, here you can make your own Christmas ornaments instead of buying them. They wanted to save that way, not like, you know, here's a coupon to buy this, you know, Christmas decor at, you know, Michael's or something like that. So that lasted about 6 months of
the
me
coupon stuff.
Yeah, of me thinking that like, but that was where I started. I was like, well, I'm going to do the stuff that I already know how to do, the DIY, the frugal living type budgeting. But then to make money, I'm going to show these coupon deals. And I quickly realized that like, well, and then I would try to do them myself and I would be in like Walgreens with like six kids and, you know, a stack of coupons trying to find this specific brand of like bag. You know, it was just like a total nightmare.
Does that still exist today, this coupon thing?
Yes, people still do this.
Really? I had no idea this business model even existed.
Steve is like, how can I automate? And now there are services that like you can buy the matchups from. And actually that app that I developed back several years ago, helped develop, was all about automating all of this.
I see.
And providing it out to the bloggers. So that was my initial plan to make money, was to do these coupon matchups and deal scenarios for people and then get rich off of 5 cent coupon prints.
Yeah, my initial plan with the blog to get rich was those little ad blocks.
Yes, because your first website has the empty space.
But yeah, my first website had empty spaces for the potential ad blocks that I was going to get that I never ended up filling.
Well, you know what's funny about all of this is that the first two ways that I made money on the site were from little companies like mom and pops approaching me about buying those little spaces on the site. And then the second way was brands contacting me and asking, because I think as I was talking about brands like, oh, Kraft cheese, like here's a deal to get like free cheese. But I would, you know, they would contact me to help them like do some promotion and, you know, do a giveaway or something like that. So those were the actual first two ways I made money. But one of the first ways was selling little 125 by 125 blocks on my sidebar to mom and pop.
So you actually sold your blocks. I'm jealous now.
I did. And there was actually a plugin you could use where you would upload the images to like a page that was published but hidden on your site, and then it would pull the code so that when that advertiser was done, you just changed the media file out. So it was like this cool high tech, you know, to run all your ads. I was looking for my media kit the other day. I wanted to find my first media kit from like 2009. And I was trying to, because I wanted to know what I charged for some of those. I wanted to see what I was charging back then. And I think I charged $50 a month for those little 125 ads on my site.
I wouldn't know because I never sold any. What I ended up doing was putting my own affiliate offers on there. But now no one clicked on those either. So
okay, so I would fill in like, because I think I had four. And if I couldn't sell one of them, because once I sold like two, I was like, oh, maybe I'll pitch comp. You know, like I became more invested in that because, hey, that's like $200 a month. And so I would, you know, if I didn't have one for the month, because three looks silly, I would always fill it with a little affiliate, you know, in the fourth box or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I did that up until 2013.
I'm trying to think.
So I was selling those little blocks for 4 years.
Nice. And people bought them.
Yes.
Jeez. Okay. I wish I had a story to share on that. I don't.
You know what's funny too is that like I remember having these like, they're not moral dilemmas obviously because it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, I would have advertisers approach me and say, can we buy it for a year? And I remember talking to my blog editor at the time and just thinking, or maybe she was just my friend. I don't know if she was working for me at that point. But, you know, having these debates about like, well, do we want to sell it for a full year? Because what if my traffic goes up and then, you know, I'm only charging $100 a month and it should be, it's worth $300 a month. But it's still like a 125 ad, right? Like,
I come to think of it, I did get an offer for it. Was a gambling site, and I didn't do it. It was actually good money, but I didn't do it.
I bet back in the day, the gambling sites were all the...
Yeah,
that was big money back
until
then.
Until the downfall in 2016 or 2017. Yeah.
Okay, so what was... those were the first two ways... Well, I made 75 cents from coupon prints, and then I started making money from brands and very tiny advertising. What was your first way?
I mean, my first real way, or I shouldn't say real way, that made even a little bit of money was AdSense.
Okay.
Because I always mention this article that I read from Steve Pavlina, like,
yes.
Make Your First Love Dollar. He was making $4,000 a day on AdSense. And I was like, oh my God, sign me up.
That still seems like a lot to me. I say this every time you say it too.
I think back in the heyday, it was doable.
Yeah.
It is still doable if you have tons of traffic. But I just remember that first $100 check I got. I was the happiest person in the world. And I used to check religiously. Like, it'd be like $1 this day, $2 that day. And I thought that was just the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, so I tried Google AdSense because I didn't read Steve Pavlina's Love Dollar. I probably would have been really into the Love Dollar back then. But I think it was 2009, I went to a conference and I found out about ad networks, which are basically AdSense on steroids, because instead of having to get clicks to get paid, you just get paid for the impressions on your site. So it's serving up typically... These are still around today. I still make money this way. They're serving up display advertising, so image ads. And they live, back when I started, they really were only in your sidebar or your header or your footer. I don't even think they were in your footer back then. It was like your header and your sidebar. Now they have everything from in content, in image, like image takeover. So instead of people seeing your image when they first get on your post, which I think these are horrific, they have to click off an ad that covers up your image. If you have a recipe, they'll show up in recipe. They'll run video ads in your content. So they'll put a video player in your content.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, they'll put a video. You can do a video player on your sidebar. I mean, it's really evolved since back when I got started. But that was my first like real money blogging was the ad. Because by 2009, I was getting a good amount of traffic on the site. And so an ad network was actually paying out. I don't have any idea what the CPMs were back during that time. But I can remember, like, my very first check was like $84, which I was excited about, because when you're working really hard for no money and then you make $84, that feels really good. But probably within like 6 months to a year, it was, several thousand dollars a month, which is a significant amount of money considering you're not doing anything. Like, you're literally just putting this code on your site and ads are being served. So that was like my first like foray into real money.
I never had good luck with the ad networks. I used a couple that never paid me, or they went out of business. I just never had any luck with them at all. So
I went with a big, I started with BlogHer, which is still around. So I started with a big brand. And then, back in the heyday, ad networks would fight for you, to switch over to them. It would get, you could actually negotiate placement and higher rates. And you probably can now if you're a blogger with 12 million page views a month. I'm not, so I don't have that bargaining power. But back in 2011, 2012, there were some months in, I think, 2011 to 2013, back when Pinterest first came out and all my stuff just hit on Pinterest right away, that my ad network checks were five figures a month, easy.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So just because the page views were so high.
Right. Crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
How has it evolved since then? Are display ads still are they in terms of?
They're very in. And, there are still bloggers out there that make, four and five figures, four, definitely four figures a day.
Really?
On display.
Holy crap.
Ads.
Okay.
People we know are making 20 to 40 grand a month in display advertising.
Wow.
Okay. And those are people that aren't huge, right? Those are people with a couple million page views a month. We're not talking about penny hoarder level.
Right.
Advertising, my problem with it, and I still use them, but I've removed a lot of the ads, is that I don't want ads over my images. I don't want, in every couple months, they'll email me and say hey, we'd love to put this ad, serve an ad in the middle of your recipe. And I'm like, no, I don't want an ad in the middle of my recipe, especially because everyone's on mobile. Right. And it's just the user experience is terrible. So, it's not been as lucrative for me since, you know, since they became able to like put ads everywhere, I just have opted out of so much of it. It's not as lucrative.
Your friends that still do it, does it cause them to lose their readership?
I mean, I think it's a toss up for them, right? Like the money's so good. It's kind of like if you're making $50,000 a month on ads and your traffic's the same, like you're going to put up with the five people that email you and complain.
Right.
Because it's $50,000, you know? I mean, if it was $2,000, that's totally different. You know, you're going to be much more aware of what's going on. But they are willing to serve video ads and things like that. And I'm just not willing to do that.
Yeah, for me, taking out the ads was a no-brainer. I mean, it was making a pittance, maybe $1,000 a month. But
yeah,
not to mention that it slowed down the site. And at the time, I didn't know how to speed it up. So
you didn't know all the tricks that you know today.
Yeah, I didn't know anything back then. I would say the first way I made major money was affiliate marketing.
Okay.
Because all these businesses used to come up to me and say, hey, you know, I noticed you're using us. Why don't you just talk about us and make some money at the same time? And so I would just write my experiences with their tools. And it was a really good stream of income because business tools all pay out like hundreds of dollars per conversion.
Yeah. See, and I think, so when I started doing the ads, affiliates was my next, kind of came along with that. But in the lifestyle world, affiliates just, you know, Amazon affiliates, I think, was one of the first people I signed up with. And back then they paid out, I think, 8%. Which was, you know, significant. But now, I mean, they've just dropped it so much and you're making, you know, $100 for a sign up or even more. And I'm sending someone to Amazon and making $1.25.
Yeah. Well, you know? What's nice about the business affiliates is if you sign someone on, you get lifetime commissions as long as they're paying.
Yeah. So a little tip that I have for people that are not in that business space but want to do affiliate marketing, and where I've made the majority of my money in affiliate marketing in the last 5 years, is working with smaller, usually bloggers that I know that have started businesses. So like our friend Kelly Snyder at Adore Your Wardrobe, she sells a class on how to dress better, which I wish they had a men's class. I would sign you up.
Please, I teach a class on that.
You did go to the men's style conference.
How to dress great and casual at the same time.
How to wear all your t-shirts and still look amazing. but I don't know what the retail price of her course is right now, but I think her payout is about $37 or $47 a sign up. And so that's actually, for me in the lifestyle space, that's a huge affiliate payout. So, like, you know, people like her, people like Aaron Chase, who have, you know, the FreeZeezy and the $5 meal plan. The $5 meal plan, you don't make a lot of money from that. But her FreeZeezy memberships, you know, that's a recurring affiliate revenue. People like Laurie from Passionate Penny Pincher, she actually offers affiliate commission on her digital and physical products that she has. She sells planners and menu cards and things like that. So for me, that's become much more lucrative because, one, those are reoccurring, which is what you're talking about. And then, two, the payouts tend to be higher than the paltry 1%, 2%, 4% that Amazon, and Amazon's changing it. This is the fun thing about Amazon. They change it all the time, and they can. And then if you get too big, like all these huge bloggers that have been blogging for a long time had their Amazon commissions cut years before the rest of us did. You know, people like Hip to Save and things like that. I mean, when we were still all making 8%, Amazon reaches out and is like, hey, you're driving too much. You can have 4.
Yeah. Don't even get me started on Amazon.
Yeah. So I think if you're in a space where you're thinking, oh, maybe that's not a way that I can make money, get creative with that. You know, and then also we talk about this. We've talked about this before. I think we've done affiliate marketing, but like Commission Junction, Impact Radius, Share a Sale. What's the other one you use?
AWIN.
Yeah. If you're a fashion blogger, Reward Style, Shop Style, you can go into these affiliate platforms and find companies that you want to work with. One company that is like a mainstream company that still does well for me is Walgreens.
Really?
And it's because, I know, crazy, right? But they do like great deals on photos. And since I talk so much about decor and like lifestyle and all that sort of stuff, I can always promote their photo products, like the photo books and the prints and the posters. And so that's actually one of the mainstream affiliates that's done pretty well because people will come to a post where I talk about how to like make large prints to hang up in your house. And they'll click over because you can order them online from Walgreens.
What is the payout for that?
It depends on what it is, but it's around 10%. So okay. It's, you know.
Yeah. So it's on average for physical products, right?
But that's the thing. Like, I would have never known that I could be a Walgreens affiliate until I was in, I think they're in Sheriffsdale, maybe it's Impact Radius. I don't know, because they all jump around too sometimes. But I was in there one day with another affiliate and saw that, I was like, oh, Walgreens is in here. I wonder what their photo, and they give you like early access to sometimes to deals and things like that too. So you know that deals are coming. And that's a lot of times the case in those affiliate platforms is you get a little bit of a preview of things so you can work on a promotion or something like that. I know it probably works for you if there's a tool or something that's having like a free 2-month offer or something like that. It's a great time for you to talk about it because you can get people signed up. And then if they convert, you get the money.
I mean, there's an affiliate program for almost every company in existence. I was shocked.
Yeah.
You just have to type in the company and then affiliate and you'll find something.
Yeah.
And I have no qualms about promoting affiliate offers because if I'm using the tool and I like it, like, you know, may as well make a couple bucks because I was going to talk about it anyway.
Yeah. And I think we have a whole podcast on affiliate marketing, but definitely listen to that one.
Yeah.
I'll try to link to it in the show notes. But because there's definitely some tricks to having those convert better than just like you were doing when you first got started where you're putting that image in the sidebar.
Yeah.
And it's like those weren't converting at all. Well, those aren't going to convert. But when I can talk about like, you know, Kelly's Adore Your Wardrobe and I can show before and after and like this is how you look and this is how you look now and you didn't lose any weight, you just changed how you dress, like that's a selling point. Like you have to be able to talk about the product or the service in use and convince people that that's a reason why they want to buy it. It's just like whenever I have a love of Shark vacuums, and whenever I talk about the Shark vacuum, I sell them on Amazon. But it's only because I'm talking about like, oh my god, I love Shark vacuums, right? Which is silly, but it works.
Shark as opposed to Dyson?
I'm not a Dyson fan.
You're not a Dyson.
I think they're overpriced. I feel like the Sharks are as good and they're indestructible. And I'm hard on vacuums. Like I bought an Oric, you know, those things that were $8,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they have like a 1,000,000-year warranty. I had that thing in the shop like twice a year.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't mess with me in vacuums. I like to vacuum. I'll vacuum every day. Okay. What was the next way you made money? I think I know the next way.
Do you? Sponsorships. Is that what you were thinking?
No, it's not what I was thinking.
Okay. Do you do sponsorships anymore?
I don't do them anymore.
Yeah. They can be a pain if you're not aligned. Like all the sponsors I have now are great, but there's a couple of times where I took on a sponsorship and they kept wanting to change little things about what I was saying.
Yeah.
Or I'm like, hey, this is my interpretation of your product. Like, just let me pitch it because I know how to pitch it. Like if I give it my own point of view,
it's
then that
sell.
Always converts better.
Yeah.
Then if you want me to read this canned thing or make sure you talk about this one thing, it sounds really salesy. It's not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I did tons, like sponsorships was my bread and butter for like 5 years. I was pulling in 5 figures a month on sponsorships alone. But the problem is exactly that, is that it's twofold. Like one, sponsor money is fun. Right. Because they come at you sometimes with like these big deals and you're like, you get like dollar signs in your eyes. And then when you start working with them, you realize that they want you to read this canned message or write this canned, or they want,
or
like,
they want
full
to change
editorial.
You to change your content. That's the worst.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's and I don't mind them being able to read over a post or look at the content and say, can you make a tweak or finding a grammatical error or something like that? Like that does not bother me in any way. Or could you not use this photo? Like that stuff doesn't bother me. But when it becomes like a pure like rearrangement of your whole what you want to say, it's not going to work for them either.
Yeah. I'm just super anal now about any sponsorship that I have. I'm like, I'm really upfront. I'm like, hey, I'm just going to tell it like how it is. And trust me, that works much better when I talk about the good and the bad. And just trust me to promote your product because I don't promote anything I don't use or a really close colleague uses. And it just works.
Yeah. And I will say like probably in like 2013, 14, I fell into the trap of like, because the money was just so good that I was taking deals with companies I shouldn't. They weren't awful. Like I wasn't taking gambling sites, right? I wasn't promoting horse racing. But, you know, I had like a whole section on my site on nutrition and I did a big deal with Coke. Like, and you know me, I love Fountain Coke. Like, I'm a Fountain Coke fan. But you can't, like, have this whole section on your site on nutrition and then do a sponsorship with Coke. You can, like, I'm okay saying, like, hey, there are days when I want a Chick-fil-A drive-through Coke and a Styrofoam cup. Like, I'm not ashamed to say that. But I can't be promoting Coca-Cola all day long when I have, like, literally a post on how to quit Coke. Like,
but Coke makes other products that are healthy. Like water.
Yes, they do. But the problem was that's not what they wanted me to talk about. They wanted me to talk about Coke.
Okay, that's pretty bad, Tony. Sorry.
I know. But, you know, I got starry-eyed. It was Coke. And I do love them. I just talk about how bad they are for you all the time. You know, but then once I kind of got out of the fog, the money fog, I got approached by Discover, which I've always been a no credit card person on my blog. I've always said, you know, especially like I was like no credit cards at all, use a debit card. I've changed my personal stance on that. But I think there's a lot of people in this world who once they get a credit card are just unable to manage it. And so they find themselves into like serious debt because they can't manage their credit cards. And Discover came to me with a very lucrative offer. And I went back to them and I said, you know, I just don't promote credit cards. So like, what can we talk about that, you know, works? And we ended up doing like a series of four posts that were actually like pretty helpful. Like one of them was like, hey, if you have bad credit, how do you repair your credit? And I didn't talk about Discover at all in the post. It just at the bottom, it said it was sponsored by Discover. And I showed and I linked to like their, I think their credit monitoring tool or something like that. So I was able to like write some content for them that wasn't promoting like getting a credit card.
But so you wrote about payday loans instead?
I wrote about pawn shops and payday loans. But so I think you can do it that way. But, you know, but that was me going back to them and basically saying, I need total editorial control over this if you want to work with me. But I had so many posts about what they wanted me to write about that it made sense to do it. Okay, what was your next way?
Well, what were you?
Sponsorships was my next way, too. I thought your next way was going to be that you launched your course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The course was just something, I don't want to say by accident, but it was something that I was reluctant to do.
Yeah.
But then everyone just kept asking for it. And so I was like, okay, fine. If I get 10 people to sign up, or I can't remember. Yeah, I think it was 10 people to sign up. I'll follow through and create it. And then the rest is history. And then now we have profitable audience together also.
Yeah.
I found that I actually enjoy it.
I do too now.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to either. But
Well, here's the thing. Like if someone comes up to me and says, hey, I'm making this amount of money now thanks to your class, it feels really good.
No, and actually we had this happen a couple weeks ago where one of our students, actually our very first student, David Crable, shout out to David, launched his first paid, kind of his first paid product.
Yeah.
And he made, I think he did really well on his launch. I don't want to disclose it because I don't know if he wants to disclose it, so I won't put it out there. But I think he did amazing. And I'm not saying that we should take any credit for that at all, but it just felt really good to see him launch and have success and have watched him for like the past year and a half sort of work through all of his like business problems and then see it come out to this.
And here's this other thing. You know about this, but I don't think anyone else knows about this. But I've been working with my tennis coach because over here, there's been COVID-19. Like everyone's been canceling their lessons. And then California wildfires, like when it's smoky outside, he can't give lessons anymore. So he wanted to take his business online. And we launched his product, his first product, not too long ago, a couple months ago. And it's been doing really well. And he's ecstatic. Yeah. I mean, the amount of money he made with that digital product is like hours and hours and hours of tutoring.
Yeah. So I want to back up just a little bit because I know we're getting close to being done, but I want to talk about three other ways that I've made money. And I think two of them you have, maybe.
Okay.
So the first one is digital products, which I know you haven't really taken that plunge, which doesn't really make sense at this point in your business, in my opinion. But for me, like I started with eBooks back in, I think my first eBook was 2009. And to me, and then I moved into like Amazon KDP, which is basically Amazon's eBook program. So that was came alongside the other things that I was doing. And that one still makes me money. And depending on, that one is solely dependent on the level of revenue on that is totally dependent on how much I want to promote it. If I don't do anything with it, it brings in money every month, but not a huge amount. If I push it, if I want to make new pins for it, if I want to bring it up in other posts, like it always bumps it, right? Same with if I want to push people to Amazon, Kindle, like I can sell the product. So that was something that actually, and I did a couple holiday books that, you know, during the holidays, I think one Christmas, I think I made like $15,000 from a 99 cent book.
What?
Maybe it was like $1. Maybe it was like $1.99. It was not expensive.
That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah. But I followed like a whole launch strategy for it, right? Like I actually put a lot of time and effort into it. But I mean, not a lot of time and effort for 15 grand. But I think relatively speaking, I was like, that's amazing. And then because it got like some Amazon reviews and things like that, it stayed, you know, for several years. It just I didn't do anything with it. And I would like all of a sudden in, you know, February, I would get this check from Amazon for a couple $1,000s. And I was like, why am I getting this check from Amazon? And then I remember I had this book sitting there that every time the holidays came around, it would just kind of bump back up because people were searching for it. That was, I think, a really good way to do it. And when I did it, I had to hire somebody to format it for me and all this stuff. Today, you can literally go on Canva and create a digital product. You know, like there's, you don't have to have any skills or hire anybody to do this for you.
Just thinking, that's a lot of copies that you sold over that holiday. That's crazy.
I know. Well, here's what I did. I got some other bloggers to promote it because they earned affiliate revenue off of
it. What, like a dollar?
And it dropped. Doesn't matter. It dropped their cookie during December.
Oh, I see. Right. This is Amazon.
So people would promote that saying all, like in the frugal blogger world, any reason they could to drive people to Amazon, they would do. So I had, you know, huge bloggers with millions and millions of page views a month promoting this Christmas book because it was free. Or 99 cents, right? So they, you know, they wanted people to go to Amazon to get the 99 cent book and buy the $1,000 big screen.
Right. Clever. Yeah. That's back when Amazon was paying out a lot more too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that strategy will still work. That strategy will work, but you need to do a little bit differently today. But that was a big thing for me. And then another way that I made money, which you and I do make money from, is events.
Yes. That one is not passive.
No, that is not passive at all. I launched my first event in 2009 called Savvy Blogging that then morphed into Digital Collab over the years. But we launched Seller Summit in 2016, which is an e-commerce event. I don't run my Savvy Blogging Digital Collab event anymore, but that was an event for content creators. But events can be, and I would say even if you don't teach like a business thing, maybe you, I mean, I remember I would teach classes on how to coupon. I taught classes on how to meal plan, and people paid me to come and teach them. So you can create an event around anything. It doesn't have to be a conference, right? Now, obviously, we're doing a conference that involves high financial risk. So I don't recommend people just run an event at all. But I do think you can start by like renting out your local Panera or your local, you know, what is it? Elks Lodge or whatever it is.
Elks Club,
Yeah. And just if there's a topic that you're really passionate about or you have a lot of knowledge on, you can teach. You could just do a 1 day event or a half day event and make money. Our friend Andrea Robinson does this pre-COVID, obviously. And now things are sort of starting to come back. But it's definitely a way to generate revenue and build a huge loyal fan base.
You know, here's my thinking, though. And I just had this talk with my buddy Andrew Darian about this. I feel like everything is digital and everything's getting much more competitive. I think we'll probably gravitate more towards in-person stuff once again. You know how like the balance always shifts?
Yep.
I think we're probably going to, especially once this whole COVID thing hopefully is over with someday, everyone's going to want to see each other again. So I think events will get hot.
I agree.
I don't necessarily recommend doing one.
Well, the problem is that like when you're running an event where you're renting out hotel space, I mean, the financial risk is really great. So if you don't have a cushion and the ability to sell tickets, don't do it. Start with a virtual event, you know, which you can make money from virtual events, too. I think there's just nothing to replace in-person events, in my opinion.
I'm curious what your last one is.
Consulting.
Oh, consulting. Okay. I don't really do very much of that.
No, but I started doing coaching back in the day with people. And that actually spun off from doing my blogging event where people would say, oh, do you do any coaching? And I typically didn't take people that I didn't take anybody that I didn't think was going to be successful before me. Like you had to already be doing really well because I was like, listen, I'm stacking the deck in my favor here. But part of it's like I don't want to invest in someone that's not going to invest in themselves.
Right.
And so that was a big thing. And, you know, I didn't charge nearly enough. And we tell people this all the time. I think I probably charged $100 an hour or something. And which, I mean, it sounds like a lot, but really for the amount of value people get. And it's not an hour of your time. It's really 2 to 3 when you think about the time you spend thinking about it and investing in them for like a coaching call. But then that morphed into like actual corporate consulting on social media, which was very lucrative for me because corporations will pay a ton of money for this kind of thing because they don't know anything. And then, you know, it's morphed into like now I do some client work. So I've taken like everything that I've learned over the years from all the different things that I've done, e-commerce, blogging, email, and I take very few clients. But if I think there's a potential there, then I will work with someone, and that's basically retainer plus revenue. So
actually one thing that I didn't talk about was my social media revenue, like YouTube. Income, and then TikTok is not really making me that much money, but you know, it's like a dinner a month.
Yeah, but here's the thing that I want to like wrap this up with and remind people, because we get this question a lot: how do I make money, how long till I make money? So the two things that I think are important is neither of us made money right away. It took us a lot of time. Not a lot of time, but not a lot of time in the grand scheme of business in the world. But we worked really hard for months before we really saw anything.
I mean, for me, I didn't make significant money. By significant money, I mean six figures until 3 years. I think just by the end of year one, I was probably getting AdSense checks. Maybe that's it.
But I think there is something to be said about seeing something in return.
Yes.
You know, even if it's a couple $100 a month, like there's just something that feels really good about that when you've been creating and creating and, you know, making videos, making content, writing things, taking photos, whatever it is, and not seeing anything for the first several months. So I think that's the first thing, is to remember that this takes a little bit of time. And then the second thing to remember, based on everything that we've talked about today, is both of us are heavily diversified in our income. Yep. And over the years, it's shifted and pivoted based on the landscape. And I mean, you started with Google AdSense. Do you even have Google AdSense right now?
I do, actually, but it's kind of, you probably wouldn't even notice it, actually.
Yeah. So I think the thing is to have an open mind and be willing to be flexible and pivot, because you want to continue to generate multiple streams of revenue so that if one tanks or dries up, that you have another one to rely on to help keep your business.
But I do want to say that you should probably just focus on one. Make sure it's good before you move on to the next. If you try to do all these things that we talked about all at once, nothing's going to work.
Right. And I think we said that too. Like we kind of just, we went, did one thing, and then we moved into the next thing and moved into the next thing. And I think in that way, you really become an expert in different streams of income, and you're able to take the knowledge you learn from one and apply it to the next one and continue to make more money.
I mean, here's why I always say that when people are working full time, that it's not as safe as having a business. Because when you're working full time, it's all concentrated on that one job, which you can lose pretty easily. Like I've lived through three downturns now, and there was a lot of people getting laid off, and it was not fun. Whereas when you have, like, you know, eight streams of income or whatnot, you know, one goes down, the other one goes up. Right now, e-commerce is super hot, and, you know, that might change, but then, like, the content stuff might be super hot again.
I think if you take anything away from this podcast, it is to focus on one, get really good at it, and then bring multiple streams of income to your business, and you will see a lot of success.
And peace of mind with your revenue. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.